is After Deadline, and my guest today is Astoria City Manager Paul Benoit. Good morning,
Paul. Good morning.
I think we always have lots to talk about because the city of Astoria always has something going on.
It's always something.
Yes. Let's start with something that a lot of people are probably noticing as they drive by out by Astoria High School. There's a great big hole in the ground and all kinds of heavy equipment there. I think it's a major, major project. Would you fill us in?
It's actually a huge hole in the ground. It's going to get bigger. Last I checked.
On purpose or just?
No, on purpose, yeah. It might get twice the size.
Yes.
And the dimensions are, I think they're going down almost 18 feet.
Wow.
And they have, people see all these hoses and pumps, you know, because they have to dewater. It's, that gets it below the water table. So it's pretty sophisticated work. I mean, they're basically building large concrete tanks. They're going to be buried under the ball field. And then when we're all done, we're going to reconstruct the ball field. The tanks will be about 3 feet below the surface of the playing field, and we hope to have it be a better field and better drain than when we started. But the whole project is for our combined sewer overflow requirements. You know, the federal government through the state, enforced by DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality, is requiring that Astoria separate its sewer system from its stormwater system. So all the rainwater that flows down the street or from your downspouts on your roof, in our system, historically, your household waste gets combined with the rainwater waste and the underground streams. And when it rains really hard, the pipe, if you think of pipes in the ground as a tank in the ground, you know, you can overflow a tank. Well, if you have enough volume flowing into the sewer pipes and the pipes fill up, they're at capacity and they're designed then to divert to the river or to Young's Bay. And because we live in a rainy climate, when we have large storm events, meaning a lot of rain, those pipes overflow, and you see combined, you don't necessarily see it, but there's combined sewage and rainwater going into the bay. And that's what the state and federal government has said we have to stop.
And it's not pretty entirely, well diluted, though. It isn't as if
It's highly diluted, yeah. And it's been happening for 100 years. Mm-hmm. But regardless, the rules are the rules. I mean, it's sort of a one-size-fits-all, whether mm-hmm. you're at the mouth of the Columbia or up in the Willamette River.
Right.
It's, you know, the same standards are applying.
And it costs a fortune, doesn't it?
It's when all is said and done, the city of Astoria could have upwards of $30 to $40 million invested in this. So what we're having to do is separate, you know, not 100%, but probably 90%. We have to separate stormwater from sewage. And so what's happening on Denver Street is they're building a very large tank, a buried tank. And instead of the pipes flowing into the Young's Bay when there's an overflow, you know, when we're at capacity, they'll fill that tank. And the tank is designed, there's a lot of science and engineering that went into that, but the tank is designed to have a capacity to take a 100-year storm event. So in other words, you could fill that tank, and they've kind of looked at the weather, you know, data over many, many years, and they've analyzed flow in the pipes. But it's designed so that that tank can fill, and the likelihood is that by time it reaches its capacity, the rain will have subsided. And then there are pumps that will then meter it back into the system slowly, so that it'll all end up at our sewage treatment facility as opposed to in the Columbia River. But again, when people see it constructed, they're going to see a lot of, you know, the holes being dug, a lot of pipes, a lot of concrete being poured. But the capacity and the design of that system is pretty sophisticated engineering.
So all those millions of dollars that this is going to cost will be paid by every man, woman, and child of the fewer than 10,000 people who live in Astoria.
Yeah, no, it's a huge burden. And, you know, when you get your utility bills, you will see on your utility bill there's a sewer surcharge. And it's big.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it is for all of us.
And, oh, it's and not just me, then.
Not just you, Sandra. And, you know, and we get, you know, we're getting more phone calls than we ever had from customers, citizens who are mm-hmm. concerned, who are getting near their capacity to pay.
Yeah.
And it's a dilemma. I mean, it's, you know, because at the same time, we're being required to cover our reservoirs. Now, we've completed the cover on Reservoir 3. People don't get to see that. Except for the dog walkers who kind of go out on James Street, you know, across from Shively.
It's not terribly attractive, you know, if you never get to see it. It'll,
well, it used to look like an open lake. It was attractive.
Nice.
It's covered now. And, you know, this summer we will be covering the Shively Reservoir.
Yes.
Again, it's a federal mandate. We've got
to
do it. And all of that goes on to the ratepayers. We have no other way of paying those bills. So it's a burden. One, you know, if you look for bright spots, I try to do that. The Department of, we've been working with the Department of Environmental Quality, and in our meetings with them, they believe and we believe there's an opportunity to reduce the standard. In other words, we're meeting a standard for overflows into the river that's requiring an extraordinary amount of separation, which means an extraordinary investment. And based on a lot of the work that's been done and the science that's been collected, the data that's been collected, we believe, and DEQ seems to be agreeing, that we can lower the standard a bit, which could save us $10 to $15 million.
Oh, that's good. Is that because of our unique location so close to the Columbia, where it's more, you know, there's more dilution?
Yeah, and just, you know, looking at the standards that Portland is having to do the same thing, mm-hmm. and looking at their standards, looking at our standards, looking at the reality of our situation.
Yeah.
It's complicated, and I don't mean that the listeners won't understand. I don't mm-hmm. know. I couldn't really explain it very well. But in the next couple of weeks, we're hoping, you know, I'll be working with the city council, but we're hoping to perhaps have a public meeting where we can lay out this opportunity, and DEQ would be in attendance. And,
oh.
But that's the one sort of bright spot. You know, the whole project is a burden.
The light at the end of the pipe.
It does protect the environment. I mean, yeah. I think we have to acknowledge
oh, yeah.
that sort of in the scheme of things, we ought to be doing some level of work to separate sewage from stormwater.
Right. I just think there should be a higher federal money component to it.
We were fortunate in the Denver Street project. We did apply for and receive the federal stimulus dollars. So mm-hmm. that's about a $7 million project. We received, this is off the top of my head, I think about $2 million in grant to subsidize that project.
That's
plus
good.
We get a subsidized loan, you know, so we're getting loan dollars at a low rate. Nevertheless, it's a lot of money, and when you spread it across the number of ratepayers we have, it's a big bump in their bill.
I just like to point out that when you said that this hole is in the ball field, that you mean the softball field and
the softball, not Aiken Field,
Field.
Yeah, it's the softball field directly across the street from the Dairy Queen.
Yes, and I understand too that there's some arrangement being made that it will be restored. Eventually.
Oh yeah, no, it'll be fully restored, and the engineers are assuring us that it'll drain better than it ever has. As part of this project, also we're going to be constructing new restrooms for Tapiola Park, and that'll be real nice. Right now, you know, there's a small concrete block house kind of between the skate park and the varsity baseball field, and it's in bad condition. I mean, it's not that it's poorly maintained, it's just
real old.
It's old and kind of stark. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So we will be constructing a new facility that'll be just adjacent to the skate park.
Sounds good. It's already a beautiful place over there, and will be again and even better. And this is After Deadline. I'm Sandra Swain from the Daily Historian, and my guest this morning is Paul Benoit, the city manager for the city of Astoria. Well, Paul, speaking of parks, there's quite a big reorganization that's been going on, kind of integrating the Astoria Aquatic Center with the rest of the Astoria Parks and Recreation Department, which has been named that again, gone back to the original name.
Right.
And we've got J.P. Moss there as the interim director. Fill us in on where things stand with
this, as most people know, this all started, you know, for us last year when the economy was in bad shape. It affected cities and households alike across the country, but as part of our trying to reorganize quickly to keep from being in very bad financial shape, one of the proposals that was made actually by me was to close the Aquatic Center. The city council, and I think it was a really wise move on the part of Mayor Van Dusen and the council, was to know we can't just close it on the citizens. If we're going to do it, we need to think it through and phase it out. But in the meantime, we did we were introduced to J.P. Moss. He is our interim Parks and Recreation Director at this time. And through his unique expertise, we've been able to, over the course of this last year, turn that aquatics facility around from a facility that was losing about $500,000 a year. This year, it would have lost $500,000 had we done if nothing different.
And you had a $1 million gap at the time that you were thinking about closing it down, if I remember.
Citywide, had we done nothing, we had $1 million gap to fill. Mm-hmm. By closing the aquatic center, that would have made up for about $500,000 of that. We said another $500,000 to right. save. But regardless, I mean, the story is that the aquatic center has been completely reorganized. It's run in a very different way, and we've closed the gap. I believe that we could end this year, this fiscal year, so June 30, at a break even, which would be $500,000 swing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's amazing, and there's a lot different, and we're running it very differently, but we're running it in a way that's bringing more customers. So it's actually a happy thing.
Oh, it's wonderful. I think the real stroke of genius, and yet it seems so obvious, but I never thought of it, was taking the Parks and Recreation office out of the hole in the wall where it was for so many years in City Hall.
And that was Mayor Van Dusen's idea.
Was it? Well, it's a fantastic idea, and putting it over at the Aquatic Center, and that brings in people to the Aquatic Center who have would ordinarily maybe never even walk in the door, for one thing. And it just puts everyone
right.
together and avoids...
And it's part of the reorganization that you mentioned. You know, now, again, we went from long ago, or several years ago, it was Parks and the Recreation Department. Then it got changed to Parks and Community Services Department. And I think that was in the brief interim when they had the library under its wing. But anyway, we've gone back to Parks and Recreation as a name. The department is centered at the Aquatic Center. The Aquatic Center really is one of the jewels. You got the column, Tapiola Park, the Aquatic Center. This community is really blessed with wonderful parks and
43
resources.
Yeah, 43 or so.
Let alone the trails and the Riverwalk. But now, the department is, instead of being in City Hall, is really focused at one of the more attractive, heavily used recreation points. What we're doing, though, in this reorganization is we've eliminated two positions. We've eliminated what we used to call the senior recreation coordinator, and we eliminated the administrative assistant position, which was the secretary's position. In their place, we've created three new positions at budget neutral. We just took the salary savings and other savings within that department, created three new positions, each called recreation coordinator. One of the positions is going to focus on kind of birth to 7-year-old, so toddlers.
Completely unserved before, according to J.P. Moss.
He said largely unserved.
Almost nothing available really before for toddlers
until now.
I
think we did a good job with sports and some of the...
They're terrible hitters, though.
No, but for the community, I think that there's been a focus on, on some of the kind of mainstream sport activities. And there's been other activities, dancing.
Oh, yeah. There were no programs for anybody, but I'm just saying that was
but
a
now,
population
but,
that
but
wasn't
But now
served.
The programs are probably expanded literally 100-fold, 100 mm-hmm. times. And the recreation coordinators are going to focus on age groups. So that sort of toddlers to 7-year-old group, another group that for now we're calling teens and tweens, probably that 8 to 13, 14, 15, mm-hmm. and then kind of older teenagers and adults, and just develop programs that hopefully they're going to find really attractive. And I think if people who are listening, particularly who are in the Astoria area, think of the last time that you opened our activity guide and got excited about something for yourself. Say, I want to do that. Yeah. Maybe we could have kayaking lessons. Maybe you could kayak in the Lower Columbia and, bird watch for kids, they have the sandcastle day in Cannon Beach. Maybe we could have classes in sandcastle building or whatever. I mean, there's any number of things you could do that could be attractive to people in all age groups. And that's going to be the focus.
It's really an exciting time. And I think it'll be wonderful for the city of Astoria.
Yeah. And, two things could happen from this. One is we the hope and expectation is we will much better serve the recreational needs and desires of our population. But if we do it right, and we program it right, and we do things that are attractive to people, because there's revenue associated with that. I mean, I don't want to imply we're doing it for the revenue. We're doing it to serve the citizens.
Well, you want but to at least break even. So
If we can, right now, the Parks Department, now granted, maintenance is a big factor in that, and we're maintaining community halls, but that department is about between $800,000 and $900,000 a year to operate. And that just comes straight out of the general fund. If we could generate enough revenue that, you know, say it's an $800,000 or $900,000 department, but you're generating $300,000 or $400,000 in revenue from things that people want to do. I mean, they're happy to pay it because we're offering programs that they're excited about. Then you can start reducing the cost of that department, and you can direct sort of those revenue, you know, the tax resources that we're spending on parks and recreation to, you know, to the library, to the police department, to the fire department, and, or to other initiatives that, you know, the city council is interested in. So, and I think going forward, you know, in this economy, we've learned a lot, and I think we just need to be more efficient. In fact, that's one of the city council goals for the next coming fiscal year, is to really look for efficiencies wherever we can. We ought to be doing that all the time, but even in our own households in tough times, you know, you turn the heat down, you may turn the lights out, you know, you just change your habits, and it's just smart. And I think this forces us to kind of reassess and take a new look at what we're doing.
So when you are drawing up what you'd like to see in the next permanent director of that department, when are you going to start advertising for that, and what will you be looking for?
You know, and there's two things about that. We'll be looking for someone who knows aquatics facilities. You know, not that that's an area of focus, but they need to understand how we're operating now, and you know, understand that there's, particularly in operations like that and with our parks, there's this kind of cross between service to the public and being entrepreneurial and businesslike. And we're not a business. Cities aren't businesses. they're public service entities. But I think we need someone who's entrepreneurial, who has a good business sense, you know, who can look at those operations and always improve. You know, that has to do with marketing, programming, customer service. There are skills that we're really going to be focusing on that, you know, that J.P. Moss really has introduced us to, and it's and those people are out there. I mean, there are parks and recreation departments that run that way. I think ours historically is more typical of the norm. You know, when you look at aquatic centers across the country, public run aquatic centers, they're, you know, they don't make money. They're not expected to make money.
We were told that initially when asked to vote for that facility, that it would probably never break even, would always need a subsidy.
$100,000. And that is the norm. I mean, across Oregon, across the Northwest.
So it's thrilling to think that instead of that, it may actually be bringing
in. And actually, we've been getting phone calls from cities, you know, across the Northwest, because they, I don't know if the Associated Press, someone picks up those Daily Historian articles.
Happy to know that.
Well, and so I've gotten calls from city managers up on the Canadian border in northern Washington.
Well, they can't have JP.
Well, they have aquatic centers, and they're wondering, because they're in trouble too. And it's tough economic times. They're wondering, well, how'd you do it?
Because the thing about the aquatic center makes a difference. It's not like a piece of land that's just standing there. It's always got, you know, expenses to keep the water at the right temperature and just all those things. So it's easy for, if you don't keep an eye on it, it just starts racking up a lot of bills.
And if you look at the back room, people don't go into the back rooms of the aquatic center. There's a lot of equipment back there, a lot of pumps.
I've been there,
filters.
And it's almost frightening. I have no idea what's going on.
No, it's expensive. You're right. Your fixed costs are very, very high. And the only way you can offset that is with people coming in the door and paying for things that they want to do, you know, whether it's swim or some of the new rec programs, you know, the
dry land exercise,
the studio
stuff,
cycling, yoga,
and they even have a place for people to bring their children to, you know, while someone's taking one of those classes.
Yeah, we've added daycare. Should have done that a long time ago. Now you can drop your child off. You have to be there.
You can't
have to be in the
facility.
You can't just drop them off. But for, I think it's a dollar, a half
it's
hour.
Very cheap.
Or two.
I don't remember.
It's very inexpensive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've had parents trapped in their homes. And I mean, I have three sons. You know, they're all older now.
I remember those days of being trapped in my home.
Well, in the middle of the day when babysitters tend to be in school, and you're home and you want to have an activity, but you've got two or three kids or even one. Now you can go to the aquatic center.
Four.
They're right in the lobby in a fenced-in area with toys and activities, and we have a staff person manning it. And so you can feel very good about it and recreate at the aquatic center. It's brought a lot of people in that otherwise weren't able to.
Do you expect to start advertising for a permanent position?
Early to midsummer.
Okay.
And, you know, I've been talking to the director of, there's a an Oregon Association of Parks Directors, and they've been advising me that the worst time to go out and recruit for a full-time director is in the spring, early summer. That's the busiest time for a parks program. Mm. It's when the kids are getting out of school, when they're starting swim lessons.
Right.
So a good parks director, they said, is going to be so focused on their own programs, you know, that they're not going to, you know, they're not going to respond.
Oh.
So the advice is, you know, when you get in July, August, that's sort of a, they're phasing, getting ready for the fall, and it's a time where, in their experience, you get much better response to recruitment. So that's the plan. In the meantime, you know, JP is actually doing a great job.
Oh,
He's making a lot of changes, and change comes hard. You know, we've all experienced that over the years, because, you know, there are routines and things that people have come to expect, and we're making changes, but they're good ones, and they're ones that we need to make. And so, is you know, with his vision and his energy and some of his new eyes and perceptions, you know, we're looking at the cemetery. That's another, you know, we own that cemetery, the Ocean View Cemetery.
Well, before we get into talking about the cemetery, I'd like to tell everyone that this is After Deadline, and our guest is City Manager Paul Benoit, the City of Astoria, and our engineer here is the redoubtable Terry Wilson. Yes, I was going to mention that although the Parks and Recreation Department no longer has the library, they've always had the cemetery. And I've heard Renee Caldwell, for example, come to the city council and talk about how difficult it is now to make a living because more people are getting cremated and not being buried and all kinds of different reasons. And there was a movement at one time to get a cemetery district formed and so forth. But anyway, it's an expensive thing. And so what's up with that?
Well, you know, we're also taking a look at that and how we operate and trying to educate ourselves as to how other cemeteries operate across the country. And there may be some things we can do differently there, too, both in terms of how we manage, how we staff, services that we offer. You know, might be small. I'm making this one up here. But, you know, someone may want to have a grave particularly cared for, you know, a loved one who's passed away and you want flowers on special holidays. City could provide that service.
I would have never thought of that.
You could, you know, for a fee, particularly, you know, you may live out of state and your mom, dad is at the cemetery and, you know, we have people there. And so there are probably things that we can do that would actually be of great service and benefit to, I'll call them clients or citizens, people who are using those services. But there may be some additional things we can do that people would be willing to pay for, because right now, you know, cemeteries don't make money. We don't operate them to make money. I mean, that's not the intent in a public cemetery, but you certainly hope they'd break even.
And for people who may not know, our Astoria Cemetery is actually in Warrenton, the Ocean View Cemetery, but owned by the city.
But my only point in bringing the cemetery up is I think we need to look at all of our operations and what we do and how we do it and to see if there aren't some opportunities to make some changes that would just reduce costs.
And the fact that our cemetery is operated by the city is really fortunate because so many of those little cemeteries
are struggling.
Yeah. And I hate to say it about my hometown of Chicago, but there was a huge scandal there where they were just kind of, I won't even go into it,
but it was
awful. Okay, well, let's turn to another topic now.
It doesn't surprise me to Chicago.
Oh, stop.
Whatever the story would have been, it wouldn't surprise you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Now I'm going to get you. No, let's talk about City Hall renovation.
Well, that's been a city council goal for some time. It's been something that I've had a strong interest in. And this City Hall, anyone who looks at it knows it was built as a bank. And it was built just after the Astoria Fire, I think 1926, 27. Mm-hmm. And if you think of your American history, probably world history, 1926 or 27 was not a good time to build a bank because the Great Depression hit in 1929.
And that's around the same time that the Astoria Column was built, too. Things must have been really good here.
Between the fire and the column and the Depression, a lot going on. But the bank closed. City Hall, the City of Astoria took it over in the early 1930s, I think 1932 or 33, and have been in it ever since. And I've seen old blueprints that show the city in that building. And everyone's largely in the same place as they have been since 1933.
Isn't that amazing?
And when you walk in the front door of the building, if you say, I need to see engineering or building codes or city manager's office, they'll say, geez, you need to go outside, go around the corner, come in the side door. Well, when it's blasting rain, which is often, and you just walk into a warm building and you want to do your business and you're told, go back outside. I mean, it's an odd setup. And so the concept is to renovate that building in a way that allows us to provide much better service to the citizens. And we would bring the departments that have the highest public contact, like building codes, engineering, planning, down to the first floor. And so you could come in the front door, get most of your business taken care of. And if you want to go to the second floor or third floor, you'll be able to do it by coming in our front door.
But your plans for that, you've been thinking about that for a long time, but apparently a lack of money has thwarted forward movement on that.
Yeah, you know, when the economy tanked, really, we just put that whole project aside. I'm hoping, actually at our next council meeting, which will be April 5th, to invite the architect who's been doing the schematic plans for the building to come and provide the council and the community with an update as to what the schematic plans look like, what's possible. You know, we've not gone to the blueprint stage in this project at all. That would require council action. But, you know, it's a project, I think, that would really benefit the citizens, and at some point we need to do it.
Sounds good. And you know, it sounds like a really wonderful idea. It's just, I guess it's budget time now, so will you be able to maybe look at budgeting something for that in the
I mean, actually the budget committee begins meeting in late April. And council goals and all of these projects will be on the table.
All right. Well, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Is there anything else that you might like to talk about? Say the public plaza, for example, how that's coming along?
you know, the public plaza, the Safeway block or the American Legion block, sort of as we all call it. You know, it is again, for the last 2 years, and again this year, it will be a council goal to make some forward progress on that. In fact, one of the council goals proposed for the coming fiscal year is to absorb that block into the Astor East Urban Renewal District. And we'll have plenty of public meetings sort of about that.
Why would that help?
It would help finance public improvements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to, right now, that's one of the issues there's no financial resource to do what people really want to see achieved there, which is to create a really nice, well-designed, welcoming living room for the city, sort of a public square. And, you know, there are concepts out there that there are things we could do in partnership with private sector, but it's going to take some public money, and urban renewal may provide a resource to get something like that done.
Well, Annie, I kind of, not an upbeat note, how about that Waldorf Hotel?
How about that whole
thing? Well, it's owned by a private party now, so I guess there's not much the city can do at the moment.
Well, I keep talking about longstanding city goals. We need to start clearing some of them off the table, and I know the council feels strongly about that. But one of the goals is to adopt a derelict building ordinance, and we will be bringing that to the council this spring. In fact, we're going to bring a draft ordinance at the next meeting, April 5th. People ought to come if they're interested in that. But the Waldorf is likely to be one of many buildings high on the list for action when we have an ordinance like that in place.
All right. Sounds like a great idea. Well, you've been listening to After Deadline. I'm Sandra Swain from the Daily Astorian, and we've been talking with Astoria City Manager Paul Benoit.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.